ask God to everything. I think I know you, God, the steps, recovery, big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay, we've been really having, I think it's been really great. We spent quite a few weeks on To Wives. There's so much in there. And today we're going to be finishing up the family afterwards, depending if I don't talk too much. And then next week I'm going to do It Ain't in the Big Book. Things that we hear and then what the Big Book says about some of those statements. It's really good. It's helpful. It's very informative. It helps explain what the steps are all about. And if you don't like it, if we don't finish it, we won't do it anymore. If you like it, we'll finish. So, as long as you don't get mad at me. All right. We're on page 131. We were talking about the family. Dad either gets really involved in trying to make his reputation and get money and build back his career. The other problem, or dad or mom, is trying to become a spiritual guru and going all out spiritually and driving the family crazy in that regard. And so they're trying to tell you to have balance. And what is your priorities? And basically, it doesn't come out and say it, but be a seeker of God. And we're going to get to that today. Be a seeker of God and seek His will for you and play the role He assigns in all areas of your life. On bottom of 131, it says, at the very beginning, the couple ought to frankly face the fact that each will have to yield here and there if the family is going to play an effective part in the new life. Now, it doesn't say at the very beginning the couple ought to frankly face the fact that the alcoholic has to yield. It's each person. And isn't that true of any relationship, alcoholic or not? Remember, we're all God's kids and we all have some spiritual illness and we have to learn how to get along. Father will necessarily spend much time with other alcoholics, but this activity should be balanced. And if you don't know how to do that, that's why you have sponsor, like Terry mentioned. You have somebody to talk to and make sure you have balance in your life. New acquaintances who know nothing of alcoholism might be made in thoughtful consideration given their needs. You don't know who you can help, and I like thoughtful consideration given their needs. What are the needs of other people? See, you're getting out of self. So everything should be an opportunity to be of service to God and others. The problems of the community might engage in tension. Though the family has no religious connections, they may wish to make contact with or take membership in a religious body. Now here's a clever statement that's I think is understated. Alcoholics who have derided religious people, I can't imagine alcoholics deriding anybody, can you? But we deride religious people will be helped by such contacts. Now why do we deride religious people? It's a form of how we build a false sense of self, but there's two references in the Big Book on page 87 where they talk on about the, you pray in the morning, you can ask your wife or friends to join you, you can memorize prayers, practice whatever. And it says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And then there's a really good statement on that on page 49. He's talking about we regard ourselves in the middle of the page as intelligent agents. Anybody do that? We're very intelligent. We're killing ourselves, but we're smart. It says, we agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word. Isn't that really what we're doing? People will talk about and their analysis of God or higher power, but they're looking at it with their human mind, trying to understand something that's beyond them, and trying to understand or decide if they had a creator. I always think that's funny. Who created you to think about whether there is a creator? And it says, we who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice. This is a really powerful paragraph. Prejudgment, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be. Now notice it's not the frailties of the religion, it's the human frailties. Those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. And isn't that what we do, try to do here? Give purpose and direction to each other? People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices, and we cynically dissect everything when we're alcoholics, don't we? Each other, the meetings, this one, that one, everybody. We're very good at cynically dissecting. We're all pros at it. And it says, but people of all, spiritually minded people of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. Powerful. What are you seeking today? I think if, and then we're cynically dissecting these people who have something that we don't have. And we're critical of them, and they have it, and we don't. So going back to 131, I hope that was helpful. Being possessed of a spiritual experience at the bottom of the page, the alcoholic will find he has much in common with these people, of course. Though he may differ with them on many matters, if he does not argue about religion, he will make new friends and is sure to find new avenues of usefulness and pleasure. And I think the word argue is the key here. I think it's good to exchange ideas with being open-minded and willing and honest, but once you're arguing, you're taking a stand, and then it's your way versus their way, and then things don't go well. He and his family can be a bright spot in such congregations. A lot of people in AA have become very religious, quote religious, go to church, have found a lot of peace in that, just like we do at meetings. I've been studying the scriptures the last 3 years, and it's changed my life. It's just an extension to me of the big book. He may bring new hope and new courage to many a priest, minister, rabbi, because they'll see how we've changed, and maybe that we can help them see things through the spiritual principles that we practice. There's nothing obligatory about it. As non-denominational people, we cannot make up others' minds for them. We cannot make up anybody's minds for anything. Have you ever tried to change somebody's mind? You just get on their resentment list. Each individual, I love this, should consult his own conscience. Now what I wrote here, consult your own conscience when you're in conscious contact with God. But a lot of people say, well, this is the next right thing. God told me this is the next right thing. Have you ever heard that? And they tell you it, and you say, wow. And because they're not in conscious contact with God, it's their contact, and they decide they're conscious. I don't know if that makes sense. Conscious contact with myself caused me to get here. It caused all my actions and my behavior. I want to be in conscious contact with God. So when we consult our own conscience, we want to make sure we're talking with God. We're in prayer when we do that, in prayer and meditation. Remember, it says each morning I'm to meditate on that during the day I may face indecision. Did I ask God for the right thought or action and relax and take it easy and wait for it to come? It says, we have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect. And here's a line that's quoted a lot. We aren't a glum lot. If we're not having joy and fun in our existence, then we might as well drink, right? And we want to be happy, joyous, and free. Free of what? The bondage of ourselves, like Terry said, the bondage of himself causing the problems. They wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. I find some people are pretty unhappy early in sobriety, and they're focusing a lot on their unhappiness, and they get so self-absorbed with their situations. I said, well, why don't you just enjoy your day? Find something you like to do. Find somebody to help. Find somebody to talk to. If I'm not enjoying life, whose fault is it? It's mine. Anybody ever have a bad day that they didn't cause? You see, somebody said, have a good day. Well, you know, I said, well, I could have a good day if I let myself. What's the difference between a good and bad day? It's just the way you see it. Things happen. You could be in the grocery store behind the lady with 40 coupons and say it's a bad day, or you could just play with your phone or talk to somebody or go buy something else. You know, it really depends what how you look at it. Well, all right, calm down. Excuse me. Well, you do it while you're there. You say, I'm disturbed because the lady's in line. Why am I disturbed? Because it threatens my pride and self-esteem because I'm Michael the Magnificent. And then I say, God, give me love, patience, and tolerance. How can I be helpful to this lady? Don't make any comments. God, save me from being angry and give me a kind, tolerant view. And you can do all that. By the time you're done with all that, she's done the coupons. It really works. All right, Mark, calm down back there. Mark's back. So, we try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of the nations. So they're telling you, don't watch CNN or Fox or Bloomberg or anything. Don't get too involved. Because what is our purpose, you see? And it says, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. And what is really my role? See, what's my role? If I'm worried about the world's troubles, what is my role today? What is the role God assigned me to do right now? And I'm to be the best human being, dad, father, mother, son, AA member, employee, a human being, right? Just focus on our role, what we can bring, what is our purpose to serve God and others. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, it's a good way to describe it. We give him first aid. Isn't that a good way to describe it? We're like an aid station for new people. In place, and then we give him first aid, and then we tell him what we have at our disposal. Do they want to do it or not? And so it's up to them. For his sake, we do not recount. We do recount, almost relive the horrors of our past. When you're working with a lot of people, you do a lot of four steps. You're recounting a lot of your four step. It really helps you see things, and it may it's somber at times, but it helps you put things in perspective, and you can see how you were just powerless, and it's a way to be free of the bondage itself. For those of you, here's a mistake I make. For those of you who tried to shoulder, this should be a warning, the entire burden and trouble of others, we are fine, we are soon overcome by them. Anybody do that? You get so involved. I'm worried, oh, he hasn't done his four step yet. He didn't do the resentment columns. He didn't show up today, blah, blah, blah. And then my wife's really good. She says, they're not your patients. You're not doing their cancer care plan. You can help them and be kind and caring, but you can't take it on. And it's the kind of thing, why let somebody who doesn't want to do this occupy my mind, you know, and disturb my serenity because of something they don't want to do? And then I'm just playing God, and I'm causing my own problems. So try not to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others, find we are soon overcome by them. That's a really good warning. And so they say, cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders, and we need to be able to laugh at ourselves. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience of the past. You know, somebody comes in and says, well, I had 8 DUIs, and I drove on the wrong side of the road, and, you know, I hit a deer, and then blah, blah, blah. We're all laughing. And, you know, some people would say, well, why is that funny? Because we understand. We understand the disease. We understand we're laughing because we identify, but we're laughing because we're not there anymore. And we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. But why shouldn't we laugh? Now, here's the thing. We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. Now, there's a lot of people who say, well, you're not recovering. You're either recovered or recovering. They make a big deal. There's a group in Dallas. They talk about, I'm recovered. I'm not recovering. I don't know. I was thinking about it. What is the difference? Well, it says in the foreword, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. So recovered is when you're not in a hopeless condition of mind and body today. And you see some hope, and you're not obsessed with drinking, and you've got some serenity and peace. You've done some work to have a relationship with God. And if you have a hopeless condition of mind and body today, you're not recovered. But I think their point is you don't want to be recovering. You want to be in the solution. You want to be in the world of the Spirit. You want to have a relationship with God. You don't want to be having to fight drinking every day. And so it's just semantics. And I wrote, and we have been given the power to help others. A lot of people don't want to work with people. They're afraid they're going to screw them up. You know, they're not going to do it right. Well, that's just alcoholic thinking. You know, they're alcoholics. Anything you can do is helpful. But here's the thing. God will give you the power to help them. Ask God how you're to help them. They're putting your life so you can help them. I really believe if you're not working with someone, you should try it and see if it doesn't help you. Remember, if you don't give it away, you won't keep it. And everybody knows that those of bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. And I think they're talking here not only physical health, but spiritually health. So let each family play together or separately as much as their circumstances warrant. And here's a famous few lines that are quoted a lot. God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Anybody believe that? Of course he does. He loves us. So if I'm not happy, joyous, and free, whose fault is it? Mine, back in self. It says we cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. I liked what Corey had to say last week. Some of the stuff in To Wise and Family Afterwards should be at the beginning of the book, should be in the first few pages. Because we made our own misery. God didn't do it. And then I love this. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. So who deliberately does that? It's how do I do that? It's how I see things. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. And that's the deal. If events happen, remember it says if we Father dictates of a higher power. We live in a new wonderful world no matter what the circumstances are. So the circumstances shouldn't determine how I feel. My relationship with God should determine how I feel and react to it. And that's page 68 too, if we could go back to that, because it's a powerful, and this is the thing that God told me when Curtis died, that moment I got the call. It says, on page 68, they're talking about fear. We had fear because we lived on self-reliance. Anybody agree with that? So now we have to live on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. Trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. Now here's my purpose. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. That's it. Just to the extent that I do as I would think he would have me, as I play that role and I humbly rely on him, isn't that knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out? Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? I saw that line when I got the call that Curtis died. I knew I could handle calamity with serenity if I played the role God assigned, stayed close to him, humbly relied on him, and then of course he works through people. He sent all these people to help me. And so that's a powerful thing. It says now about health. A body badly burned by alcohol does not recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. We who have recovered from serious drinking are miracles of mental health. They say that, but you know, we see each other at meetings. We have our good and bad days, right? But we're better than we used to be, right? We're seeking to be the best we can be. I'm going to skip the next four paragraphs, and I'm going to go to 134. It says the alcoholic, one of them, they're talking about sex. We don't need to talk about sex today, do we? And about eating candy, having candy. In sex, they talk about things have to be with a couple, have to, it takes time to regain the sense of intimacy. The alcoholic, here they're talking about children. The alcoholic may find it hard to reestablish friendly relations with his children. Their young minds were impressionable while he was drinking. It's like the alcoholic tornado. How many people have we affected? We can't even begin to realize how we affect people. Without saying so, they may cordially hate him. That means they have intense feelings of hating him for what he has done to them and to their mother. The children are sometimes dominated by a pathetic hardness and cynicism. And I think that's where ACOA started and got the idea. Try to help children work through the steps so they could be spiritually well, and then they would have a better relationship with their parents. The children are sometimes dominated by pathetic hardness and cynicism. They cannot seem to forgive and forget. Well, that's true for a lot of people, isn't it? Why can't you forgive and forget? Does anybody know why? Because you don't want to forgive and forget. And so it says in the big book that we have to forgive our enemies, right? And forgive us. And then after that, it says if we haven't forgiven anybody, God's not going to forgive us. That's after the Lord's Prayer, the next few lines. Because he's the only person that can keep you from forgiving is you. You may not forget, but you want to change the way you see it. So that's where the steps help you. You can see things differently if you've worked the steps with someone, and then it makes you easier to forgive them. You see it as just people who they are, spiritually ill, whatever, and they're doing the best they can. And so they may, long after mothers accepted dad's new way of living and thinking, they may hang on for months. And now they're going to, and why? Well, because the in some way, when we hang on to resentments and we don't forgive and forget, it works for us in some way, but it's not a good way. We can blame then. We can use it to blame. Remember the lady in Freedom from Bondage? She blamed her mother for all the problems in her life. She flunked out of school. She had a bad marriage. She became an alcoholic. It was all mom's fault. Poor mom. And then that's where she talks about praying for her mother, and then she was able to see mother differently. Now they could talk about living amends. In time, they will see that he is a new man, and their own way, they will let him know it. So it takes time. You don't get over these destructive relationships and family issues in a day or a week or a month. It has its own time. It's you do the best you can. God will help everybody involved, and it takes as long as it takes, as long as you keep doing your part. And so when this happens, they can be invited to join a morning meditation, and then they can take part in the daily discussion without rancor or bias. And you know, if you're living the new way, they can see it. They can see the change. And then I said last week, be the change. Now, so you invite everybody to join in meditation, and then they can take part, because in the original days, they all prayed together. They all had quiet time. Now we're so busy, our lives are so complicated, we think they are, that do you take time to pray together, the whole family, and this and that. I wrote, a family that prays together stays together. I think there's some truth to that. Why? Because they're trying to live on a spiritual basis. And then they're seeking God together. And if you're seeking God, you have some humility, right? That you need God. So you have a group of people who realize that without God, they're nothing, and they're seeking God together. It says, marvelous results will follow. Here's a warning. Whether the family goes on a spiritual basis or not, the alcoholic member has to if he would recover. Anybody agree with that or disagree? Has to. Why? If you're not living on a spiritual basis, then you're living on the basis of you. Then you're going to have fear and anger, and you're going to have shame and guilt, and you're going to take wrong actions, you're going to be in conflict with everybody and everyone, and then you're going to be irritable, restless, and discontent. And then alcohol will have power over you. Now, you won't go to the liquor store and say, I'm not living on the spiritual basis anymore. I'm not trusting God. I'm trusting myself. I'm angry, full of fear, shame and guilt. I'm in conflict with everybody and everyone. Can I have a beer? But that's what happens. You see, when people, quote, go out or relapse, it's not because they're bad. They're just not living on a spiritual basis. And you have to continue to live it. We're going to read that tomorrow night on a daily reprieve based on Wednesday night on a fit spiritual condition. The others must be convinced of his new status beyond the shadow of doubt. So in the beginning, people are watching us. They're watching our feet. They're not watching our words. They're watching our feet and what we're doing to see if we're changing. And then that they begin to be able to trust us. And then that they may want to change and do what we're doing. Seeing is believing to most family members who have lived with a drinker. Actions, not words. Watch our feet. Then they have this whole paragraph in here about the drinker, the smoker and the coffee drinker. So this guy's ahead. And I saw a blog on this that says AA doesn't work because people go to AA and still smoke. And Bill W. smoked and Dr. Bob smoked, so it didn't work. Because somebody decided if you still smoked, then you were bad. Who told him that? So anyway, heavy smoker and coffee drinker, he overindulged. Seeing this and meaning to be helpful, everybody who comments on this always wants to be helpful. My wife's very helpful. You're in the wrong lane. You need to turn. Your signal's not on. It goes on and on. Oh my God. The only time, I've only told her once in all the years of marriage, I only got mad at her once on the highway. I said, would you please shut up? And it wasn't my finest moment, but, but most of the time I just say the prayers, you know. I'll say, of course, honey, I'll do better. God willing, it won't happen again. There you go. Well, it's true. Seeing this and meaning to be helpful, and I am a bad driver, I guess, his wife commenced to admonish him about it. So she's going to admonish him by being helpful. That never works. He admitted he was overdoing these things, but frankly said he was not ready to stop. His wife is one of those persons who really feels there's something rather sinful about these commodities. So she nagged, and her intolerance finally threw him into a fit of anger, and he got drunk. Now, does that seem to make sense? He's drinking and smoking, and she's just nagging him, and she's trying to be helpful, and she's driving him crazy. So, of course, her intolerance made him drink. Now, that's not true. That's not true. Why let her control him? See, we get resentful, and then the other person controls us, and then we are spiritually ill, and it says to drink is to die, and if we have to be free of anger, or we're going to die. So it's really not true that she didn't cause him to drink. He decided to drink. Of course, our friend was wrong, dead wrong, notice the word. He had to painfully admit that and mend his spiritual fences. Though he is now the most effective member of AA, he still smokes and drinks coffee, but neither his wife nor anyone else stands in judgment. She sees she was wrong to make a burning issue out of such a matter when his more serious ailments were being rapidly cured. You know, if somebody wants to still smoke, they're going to still smoke. I believe if they decide they don't want to smoke and they ask God to help them, they could quit. It's up to them. It's like anything. Did we want to stop drinking or not? If smoking isn't making your life unmanageable and you haven't hit bottom when you're smoking, then you'll continue to smoke. It's up to you. I had people dying of cancer and caused by cigarettes. And then the family members would be fighting over his continue to smoke. I said, leave him alone. It's not going to change the outcome. You're just driving yourselves crazy. And they could see it. I mean, the problem is if you smoke and you get a bad disease, you'll feel guilty. And then, I don't know, I never asked the patient if they felt bad from smoking and it caused their lung cancer. Never came up, so anybody decides it's their problem, it's not my issue. And it says, we have three little mottos which are apropos. Here they are. First things first, seek God first in any situation. It comes from, first seek ye first the kingdom of God, it comes from the scripture. If you're seeking God first, then you need to do that before you react. Now, what's that line? John likes it, when we're agitated or doubtful, we pause. So I have to pause when anything's bothering me and seek God and ask God for the right thought or action. Anybody do that all the time? No, we don't do it all the time. But I know when I'm disturbed, I need to do that. I need to pause. That's the whole deal, the serenity prayer. Live and let live. Tolerance of behavior and opinions of others so they will in kind tolerate me. I looked it up. Anybody think that's good? Mm-hmm. Tolerate the behavior and opinions of others so that they will be kind and tolerate me. And isn't that the golden rule? As we wish others to do to us, we should do to them. And then easy does it means relax, take it easy. And I wrote, no attachment to what happens. So I don't know, I got a lot out of this chapter. It's good stuff, isn't it? And we'll stop there and open it up and thank you. Thanks.